And so it was decreed that each year the various districts of Pan-Am would offer up in tribute one young man and woman to fight to the death in a pageant of honor, courage, and sacrifice. The lone victor, bathed in riches, would serve as a reminder of our generosity and our forgiveness. This is how we remember our past. This is how we safeguard our future.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus Hunger Games retrospective series.
This is history. Right here at this table.
Hosted by Jacob.
Everyone's either going to want to kiss you, kill you, or be you.
Stuart.
Everybody who's anybody is here, and they all want to meet you.
And Arnie.
Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
This podcast will contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
It's appalling. Still, if you abandon your moral judgment, it can be fun.
Listener discretion is advised.
Let's get to work.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Rebellion, as we discuss The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1.
Only half of it, really, and not even the best half.
Starring Jennifer Lawrence, Josh Hutcherson, Liam Hemsworth, Woody Harrelson, Elizabeth Banks, Julianne Moore, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Jeffrey Wright, Stanley Tucci, and Donald Sutherland, directed by Francis Lawrence. This is Arnie, your co-host of Now Playing.
Stuart in L.A.
And this is your co-host on fire, Jacob, in a much dour mood this time, my Caesar.
Yeah, I've noticed. You sound a little broken down. Is it because you're not getting the whole book this time?
Well, no, just Caesar so sad in this one.
Yeah, he is.
Jacob, you're our Mockingjay then?
I will not reveal my alliance yet. You'll have to see what dress I'm wearing.
Are you the one we're going to parade around and not even call you by your name and just call you the Mockingjay?
Yeah, does she get called Katniss? Maybe in the first half of the book, she's just called the Mockingjay, and that's why that's all we hear in this movie, because it's half a book.
I'd rather be called Mockingjay than Katniss. That's just me, but names are names. But the name of the book is Mockingjay. And folks, I can't underline this enough. This is always difficult, right? When they make the choice to break a book in half, it means that you're not going to get a complete movie. And we encountered this before with Hobbit, where they broke that very small book up into three very long movies. I know if you're Twilight fans, they've done it there.
Harry Potter did it.
I think Harry Potter was the first to really say, we're doing one movie per book. And then when they started to reach the finish line, the lip service they paid is, oh, the book is too complex to fit into one movie. When in fact, what I really believe is, oh shit, the money train's almost at the last stop. Let's stretch it out one more movie.
I gotta believe that that is the choice here. There's no reason that they couldn't get all of Mockingjay into this movie, but by doing it this way, it allows them to get everything that was in the book, and then some, onto the screen. So I guess if you're a completist, if you want to see every moment realized and not see someone make adaptation choices, maybe these part ones, part twos, part threes are good for you. But it kind of turns a movie-going experience into serialized television.
Yeah, we kind of dealt with this with Lord of the Rings, but I felt like The Hobbit was a unique beast, the way Peter Jackson approached it and whatnot, and how it was kind of fluid. They didn't even know how many movies they were going to do. This is really our first time dealing with a marketing machine that is intentionally taking the last book and splitting it into two parts, which now Harry Potter did it successfully, and now, like, every book franchise is going to be doing that. I expect The Maze Runner to have an ending in two parts, and...
Is that still going? Divergence, Insurgent, whatever that is?
I'm not sure we're going to get to the finish line on all of those properties. I do think that some of these kind of trail off. The interest wanes, right? Maybe the first one does okay.
You think they're going to go the way of the Chronicles of Narnia?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's right.
I don't think everything gets finished, but Hunger Games is big. Hunger Games sold 60 million copies. They're going to complete this, and we will get the full story next week. But for right now, yes, I know you guys, or at least Jacob, was so excited to get going last week, and I just...
No, I was excited to get going.
I had to bite my lip. I was like, oh, well then...
You were trying to tame it down a bit. I heard it in your voice.
I saw this movie already, and I knew that if you were coming to it with excitement, you were probably going to be disappointed. I mean, I think the one thing that by breaking it up, it, I guess it gives people the opportunity to walk out on the middle of the movie. Like, basically, you have the option to not find out what happens in Mockingjay by only watching part one. But I just, you're not going to get a complete story here. There's characters are different at the end of this movie than they start at the beginning of this movie. Some of them, anyway. But I just don't see that this has the evolution of a complete movie experience. And so, yeah, it's just always kind of difficult to look at it this way.
The way I do approach it now that I've seen this is, you know, you get these four-part miniseries and comic books, and like that first one is all about the intro. The two is really about the twist. That third one, it's always about setting up the pieces that are going to get knocked down in the fourth one. Like that third issue is always kind of like, we got to do it to set everything up, but it's not the most exciting thing. And well, we'll see if this falls into that pattern.
Well, I heard consistently from both of you that the previous two movies had long introductions, perhaps too long for your taste, was that it took a complete hour to get to where you wanted the movie to get to. And I think that by cutting the movie in half, essentially, it means you're stuck with the boring half. I mean, you're stuck with the build-up half. What we're going to get today are all the quiet moments before the movie. Well, if it follows the book, you're going to get a lot of action next week.
And I have always been one of the more optimistic hosts of Now Playing, endlessly going in, hoping the next one's going to be good after a string of Red Arrows.
Children of the Corn, yes.
At this point, I don't think anyone's holding out hope that you're going to Green Arrow this. But that you would think that, I guess, is good on you.
Except for how you left the last podcast, Stuart. Between the things you spoiled, the cat's important. Did you see him spit up blood? And, oh, guys, the next one's shit. That I had to steel myself. I watched this today, the day we're recording, because you made me not want to watch it.
I didn't say this was shit. That is a mischaracterization. I did not spoil it. I spoiled the movie because I told you to watch the cat?
Well, I'm just saying the impression you gave me by all of the tempering of expectations was that you didn't like this one. And so I'm like, well, you liked the last two. If you didn't like this one, I'm really fucked.
You are. But I guess we'll get into it as we get into it. But, you know, they did shoot this always with the intention of making it two different parts. It was part of the design and the scope of the movie, but they shot it all in one big lump. And I think that may have been a reason why the original director was not involved. Was once I really looked at this production, it was 150 days of shooting. All of Mockingjay. So they were shooting the ending, then the beginning, then a little of the middle, then the beginning again. They were in Atlanta. They were in Berlin. They were moving around. They treated it like one big epic miniseries, but knowing that they had to get some footage completed for part one early. They started filming actually before Catching Fire even came out, which is why Philip Seymour Hoffman is able to be in the film.
And I understand he had mostly completed shooting before he died. The film we're going to be discussing next week is his last film role. He had like 1 week left to do and they just switched it around.
Yeah, and I think most of the work is in this movie. A lot of things they give Effie to do in this movie were meant to be Plutarch moments.
Yeah, Effie. We'll talk about why she's even in this movie because I don't know. But Stuart, let's get into it. Why don't you tell us what doesn't happen in Mockingjay Part 1?
Welcome to District 13. The Panem colony that orchestrated a rebellion against the oppressive tyranny of the capital more than 75 years ago. Bombs may have leveled the buildings, but life continues underground, where soldiers have been waiting with a stockpile of nuclear weapons for the right moment to strike again. Julian Moore's rebel leader, President Coyne, feels emboldened by recent uprisings in the 12 other districts and sees Katniss as a key to spreading the fire of dissent. Jennifer Lawrence's 17-year-old refugee is very angry that her home in District 12 was destroyed, but she's just as mad that her airlift out of the last Hunger Games was made a higher priority than saving fellow tribute Peeta Mellark, again played by Josh Hutcherson. And Peeta is now the captive of Donald Sutherland's evil capital president, Coriolanus Snow, who puts the boy on television to quell the public outcry and explain that he and Katniss are not aligned with the rebels. Philip Seymour Hoffman's turncoat game maker Plutarch Heavensby wants Katniss to fight back by appearing in a series of propaganda films dressed in Mockingjay battle attire. The trouble is, the girl is a bad actress, and stilted PSAs shot on green screen sound stages come off as unconvincing as Natalie Portman in The Phantom Menace. And so Woody Harrelson stumbles back into the show as dried out Victor Haymitch Abernathy to convince the rebels that unrehearsed pit stops in battleground districts will make Katniss a more effective public speaker. So our heroine teams up with a funky camera crew and gets a high-tech upgrade to her bow and arrow before heading into hotspots where clashes between colonists and peacekeepers have recently flared. District 3 nerd Beatty, played by Jeffrey Wright, hacks the Capitol's television broadcasting capabilities and airs dramatic footage of Katniss shooting down a hovercraft outside a destroyed hospital in District 8 and standing with boyfriend Gale amid the rubble of District 12. President Snow retaliates by firebombing District 13 once again, but because PETA appeared on television to expose the sneak attack, all the rebels are able to take cover in a bomb shelter in time, and no casualties are reported. Gale returns the favor by leading a SWAT team into the Capitol to rescue PETA, along with District 7 tribute Johanna and Annie, the girlfriend of hunky fisherman tribute Finnick O'Dare. And while that mission is underway, Finnick appears on television to talk about Snow's dirty secrets. PETA is located with surprising ease and whisked back to District 13, where he promptly attempts to choke the life out of Katniss. Turns out Snow had the boy brainwashed, and now PETA is filled with a burning desire to murder the Mockingjay every time he sees the girl he once loved. And so credits roll as the restrained assassin rise in pain, and President Coyne announces District 2 will be the next rebel target.
Quite a change. I honestly thought that the Hunger Games was going to be more like Harry Potter. And Harry Potter was so structured. Each book was 1 year of the calendar. Each year of the calendar, they were coming back to school, having another semester, having a new Quidditch tournament. I just felt like this would be the same thing. There would be a new Hunger Games every time. I'd completely forgotten that by the end of Harry Potter, the entire universe had fallen to shit, that people had forgotten to play Quidditch, and Harry dropped out of school, and that's where we are here. I wasn't expecting such a drastic change in the third movie.
Yeah, it's systematic of really what goes on in the book as well. Even when you read the whole complete story in the book, I think that you're going to be surprised by not having Katniss be the star of a Hunger Games, but just to be one player in a massive war. Suddenly it just takes away focus, and they try to fix that here by saying that she will be playing a symbol, and that a lot of lip service is given in this episode particularly about people playing roles and taking on the symbolic gestures of the enemy or the friend, what have you. They try. I do feel like there are elements that she pulls from, but yes, Mockingjay, just as a story, feels different and in some ways disappointing in light of the first two books. You can hear my thoughts about that over at Books and Nachos. The book is the book. We're here to talk about Mockingjay Part 1. So let's do that. I guess the place to start really is, as always, with Katniss. Now, you haven't always been so kind towards Jennifer Lawrence, but I think that she's still good here, but this is going to be introspective, quiet, angry Katniss.
I actually think this is probably her best performance, and she is, I feel like her role really is reduced in this film. I remember my dad, he read all these books and he felt like she was such a great feminist character, and then Mockingjay, that focus was taken away from her and she wasn't given a lot to do, at least with the first half. That's what I've seen here. She doesn't have a lot to do here, but I feel like as an actress, Jennifer Lawrence, yeah, it's a tougher role because it's about reactions. It's about looking at burned skeletons and being able to tell what's going on with her because of that. And I think she does a pretty good job.
I kept getting an Alien 3 vibe. You know, Sigourney Weaver had to cry and bemoan the death of her friends and spend so much of that movie not fighting aliens, not doing anything heroic, but just being sad. And I feel like this is a remake of Alien 3.
And I've honestly felt thus far that Katniss was the least interesting character in the Hunger Games movies. I like Jennifer Lawrence. You said I've been hard on Jennifer Lawrence. I like her as an actress. I like so much of what she's done. But here, I'm starting to blame the character more than the actress, in that the character has been so freaking stupid and led around by her nose ring, for crying out loud, like a cow, that she wasn't given much to do, and I don't know that she knew how to necessarily play that. But in this one, by halfway through the movie at least, We have a Katniss who knows what she's doing and is making choices and actually starting to step up to the plate. So I'll say that this is my favorite Jennifer Lawrence performance of The Hunger Games so far.
I mean, you keep characterizing it that she doesn't do anything. I see it slightly differently. I see it more like she's so unwilling to accept what is thrust upon her, that she is, in many ways, you call her a passive character, and she is stuck in a situation not of her own making. You know, she's had to fight in games she wouldn't want to. She doesn't want to play to the cameras and be the kind of person that becomes popular. And so, yeah, by being aloof, by being introverted, that makes her a strange choice for a hero. But that is kind of the dramatic crux of part one here, is that she is going to be asked to take the most visible role she's had yet. She's going to be the face of the rebellion, even though they don't want her to really fight.
What I do like about this one is that the last two films, it's all been about Jennifer Lawrence. You got to get people to like you. You got to get people to like you. Like here, that arc is a little bit different. It's about, yeah, stepping up and becoming the Mockingjay, and how can she best be that symbol? We'll see when she's told to act that that's not going to work. It's about her being herself that's going to work the most.
And yet, it's still wanting to be likable. It's just a different kind of likable. She now needs to be inspirational. And I don't know, am I alone in thinking that this is a little bit sexist, that the only way Katniss can find her way to victory, being a female, is to be likable in some way or another, and by just being herself, it's not good enough, no matter how good she shoots an arrow, no matter how good her ideas, which actually in the first two movies haven't been all that good.
Yeah, you've been the hardest on her.
No, it's not sexist. That's why it's feminist. It's because she's rejecting the idea that she has to play to those notions. I mean, that's what I like about it, is that, yes, women are so often thought of as how they should be objectified, and will they like me? Do I look good in my cute little dress? You have a character that's resistant to play to that. I think that's what makes her cool.
I guess I didn't see anyone rejecting it. Yes, if there was a rejection of those notions, then I would see it as feminist. But her entire mission is to acquiesce.
Well, that's my question for you guys, because I know where this is going, and I presume you haven't run out and read the rest of Mockingjay to find out after watching this movie. What is your perception as she meets the rebels here? You know, the introductory scenes, it's a little rearranged from where it is in the book. They bring it in a little early, but she's meeting President Coyne, Julian Moore. She's reacquainting with Haymitch and Plutarch and all of that. What is your perception about how she thinks of the rebellion?
I'll tell you my feeling, but it's not really founded on much other than intuition. First of all, I always find it disconcerting where you're introduced to a new boss or leader for our hero two or three episodes in. The fact that Julian Moore's president character has never been set up, has never been mentioned, is a little bit strange feeling. But yet, because it's Julianne Moore, she's a commanding presence. But by the same token, I just find myself not trusting District 13, and I feel like perhaps their president is trying to play Katniss very similar to how Snow was. Both are trying to manipulate her for their own ends.
I'm right there with you, Arnie. I'm wondering, you know, okay, maybe these are following along with the books. I've said, though, I've wanted to see more of this world intercut with, you know, why we're watching The Hunger Games. I wanted to see what else was going on in Pan Am. Here, we're going to find out, oh, there's a president to this movement. It feels very Matrix Reloaded and, you know, oh, all of a sudden we're all underground and we have this whole society. But I am suspect. I keep waiting for, like, this twist. Oh, Plutarch really is a bad guy. Coyne really is a bad guy. Because they are playing her, and they're not coy about it. Like, they do these videos, and they call them propos for propaganda. Like, I feel like Katniss is going to have to figure out in that last film where she really stands. And I don't know if it's going to be with either side, because it feels like both want to manipulate her. This almost feels like a social networking war, where it's like, who could come out with the best viral videos of Katniss to play, or of PETA, and to get the most people on their side?
Yeah, they are seeming to go for the most likes, aren't they?
Yeah,
no, and I like that about this series is that it does incorporate that neurosis, is what I'll call it. The idea that you're always checking your status and needing other people to validate you and all of that here.
What are you saying about me?
I'm saying it about all of us. I'm saying that this culture would respond to this world because, yeah, Katniss needs to be liked by all the districts in order to keep the spark of the rebellion going. And yes, it takes a long time for her to get to be the Mockingjay because you guys are warm here. She doesn't necessarily like these rebels. And I think we get that in these early scenes is that she is angry, maybe not as much at them, but that she does not see them as the solution to her problems. That she's still the girl that would just rather run off to the forest and live off the land. She doesn't want to be governed by anyone.
Yeah, she calls it out early. If you wanted a voice, you should have saved PETA. Like, this is where I really get that she's into PETA in this film, because she's so upset that he's been left behind along with Joanna and Annie, which I didn't really remember who that was. I think you talked about her more from the book, Stuart. So I'm like, oh, I think she's with Finnick, but they kept dropping her name like I should have remembered her.
There was, I would say, 4 seconds of Annie in the last movie where she was nominated for the District 4 pick. She was going to go with Finnick, her boyfriend, and Mags, the old woman, volunteered to take her place.
Okay, that's what I thought was her story, but I could have used a flashback there.
Yeah, that's her story. Yeah, and she also went crazy that it said that the Hunger Games broke her, as it does many tributes. We're going to find out that winning doesn't mean that you get the fat life. You know, it isn't like how they sell it, that you're suddenly a celebrity and you're wined and dined and everything is good because you survived. I mean, these people are broken. Finnick is really broken here. And I think President Coyne thinks that Katniss is broken. She is agreeing with Katniss. We should have saved PETA. You're not good enough here in the beginning. And so I guess they figure they can get her on her side the more angry she is at Snow. They let her go to District 12 to see what happened to, well, her peeps.
Yeah, and I remembered that about Annie. I remembered the breakdown story. I didn't actually remember ever seeing her, but I remembered Finnick's speech and everything. I mean, it was just a week ago. So I got that he wanted Annie very badly. I didn't get what you got, Jacob. Now that you say it, I guess that's the motivation, that Katniss is into or in love with PETA, and that's why she's so upset. I really think that at some point, it's just a matter of self-loathing. I mean, that was the last movie. She felt so guilty about herself for not thinking of PETA during the second Hunger Games, and that's when she told Haymitch that PETA must be the one to survive. I just took it as that. She thinks so little of herself. I don't even know that she thinks that much of PETA based upon the performance, but she doesn't think she was the right one to be saved. She's trying to sacrifice her life for the person she thinks is better than her.
I think PETA was better than her. I mean, PETA was the one that made the statement in the first movie, I don't want the games to change me. She didn't agree with that. She knew that if it push came to shove, she would kill him or anyone to get back home and protect her family. She was thinking about Primrose, who is going to take care of my sister if I die. And so she wasn't as generous as PETA. And I think that PETA maybe hasn't had the same impression he has in the books, but I do think it's not a self-loathing, or at least it doesn't play that way in my head. It's more like she realizes that he is a better person than she is, that he likes people more. He has the capacity to love. She doesn't love him, but she loves the fact that he can love her. But you're right to think that these rebels aren't as warm and glowing as you might want to be received. I do feel like there is something kind of scary about Julianne Moore. She's got this witch hair, for one thing, and, you know, no makeup, no frills.
Well, they do live underground. I'm not holding that against her. When we see Effie in this film, she's got, like, a do-rag on.
Oh my god, is she bald? What happened to Effie? Why is Effie even in this movie? I mean, she serves very little purpose in the movie, except
comedic effect.
Is she funny? I don't find her funny.
Oh, I think she's very funny in this. And I love the stare down that she and Coyne have when they meet, of just like, oh, your nails, your hair. And Coyne, of course, is like, you ridiculous creature from that place I hate. I think Effie's funny, but you're not wrong to think that she doesn't belong here because she wasn't in the book. They wrote her in because they wanted this character to come back and give us some laughs. The idea is, I guess, if you're going to make the Mockingjay, you need the team that was her stylist and fashion touchstones. Cinna is dead, so Effie's the best.
Yeah, we're told Cinna's dead. You guys guessed it right. I'm like, well, they didn't show his body, but we're told he's dead. But he left one last dress or one last outfit for Katniss to wear.
Yeah, and so, yes, he knew that she was going to achieve this, or at least had ideas that she could serve in the role of, what, Joan of Arc is kind of what they're going for here, right? That she has this kind of child warrior vibe that, I guess, all the districts are really into this season. I don't know. It's hard to imagine, and it was hard for me in the book to imagine that one girl, or one anyone, one man, one leader could unify 12 districts that really are doused in so much capital propaganda. How would they even see her? I mean, how often are they going to have moments to be inspired by a Mockingjay?
Well, I went along with it. What feels weird is I wish I saw, again, more of these districts interacting, but because of what we saw in the first Hunger Games, where she gives the salute to District 11 and they break out in writing, I do feel like she's become this symbol for this uprising. If there's propaganda going on to discredit her, I wish we could have saw that. We do see some of it with PETA.
Yes, PETA is that propaganda.
That is the one thing that has bugged me with all these. I don't know what all the districts are thinking. Are they working together? Do they all have their own agendas? I don't know.
It's a Katniss-centric universe, and so we just don't have characters interspersed throughout this. We don't even have ways of communicating to them. They literally have to fly in ships anytime they want to know what's going on in a different district.
Yeah, and it's also just very weird to me. Again, we'd never heard about District 13. We thought they were wiped out. And I feel like the movie took a jump between Part 2 and Part 3. In Part 2, they're in a hovercraft going to parts unknown. When this Mockingjay Part 1 starts, they're in District 13. Katniss is already familiar with it. They've already nuked District 12 or bombed it to oblivion.
We were told that at the end of Catching Fire that District 12 was destroyed.
Okay, I didn't catch that.
Not shown, though, just told.
Yeah, it was part of the bad news that Gale gave her right at the end. It's why she gave that anger face right at the last shot. She knew it, but now she's actually going to see it, and we're going to see it. It's how the book opens, and in some ways, it's probably how this movie should open, because it's you know, it's just powerful to see someone standing amid a pile of skulls.
I love that it killed absolutely everyone except the only person she cared about, her sister. And her boyfriend, those two.
And mom.
Yeah, Gale got the ones that were important to her. That isn't accidental. That is Gale being aligned with the rebels, getting the people that Katniss loved to safety.
Yeah, they call out 915 out of 10,000 survived. So there were a few survivors.
Yeah, he got some out, but I mean, the retaliation came very quick. Snow is doing that all over the place. It's done in a very brief montage, but he basically says, if you're caught with Mockingjay anything, t-shirt, pin, a selfie with Katniss, we are going to put a gun to your temple and blow you away.
Yeah, I love the moment where you see his granddaughter, like, undoing the braid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was nice. So basically, he's Disney. If it's not our property, we're going to destroy you.
He is totalitarian, and I think what's interesting is that they're playing off the idea that Coin is his exact opposite, female socialist. I mean, she makes the idea that no decisions are made here without everyone agreeing, that tribunals, that she's a leader, sort of, but she's not a monarch. She would not declare a rule or impose an idea upon everyone else. And so you have really two ideas about how government should work clashing with one another. One underground, rebellious, waiting to strike again. And then, yeah, the dictator who is trying to suppress everyone by turning up the heat, by sending in more peacekeepers.
I do have a question for when Katniss goes to District 12. And I love Lawrence's acting here. That face really sells the terror when you see all these burned out corpses on the ground. But she goes to her house, I guess the one she won in the Hunger Games.
And it's strangely standing.
Yeah, I did think that was weird.
Not a mistake. That is tactically, Snow left it standing there. He left a rose for her, too. He wanted her to know.
Yeah, that was my question. There's this, you know, she's going to collect the cat, because I guess that's Primrose's cat. I never got that before, but she's going to collect the cat, shove it into a bag. But yeah, she goes to that bouquet of roses, and all the roses are dead, except that one in the middle. And it did confuse me. I'm like, is that a bug? Is that so Snow knows that she's there?
It meant that he was just there, that he has been waiting for her to come back, that he knew that she would have to see it. And so they're playing a game. He's playing a mind game with her. he left her house standing so that she could come and stand and see the bodies of everyone else that was killed.
And then we do cut right to Snow. You talked about him bleeding. That was going to be a big deal. I get it now in this film, but he cuts himself shaving. But I like, you know, they're going over this speech and don't use the word rebels. That legitimizes them. Use radicals. I do like how, you know, it feels like how we treat war nowadays. Like everyone's so concerned. Do we use the word terrorist? Do we use freedom? But like we really get into that kind of minutia. And I felt like this movie grabs onto that.
It's a propaganda war. And I realize that that's probably not very exciting for people that actually would like to see shit blow up, for example. But that is predominantly what is happening here is Snow's going to trot out PETA to be like, no, we were never aligned with the rebels. I don't agree with the rebels. Katniss is being manipulated. I feel so sorry for my friend. And Katniss is going to come back and say, you don't really know what's going on. They did cut scenes. Believe it or not, there are scenes that they filmed for this movie that are not in this final cut. And most of them do involve PETA and Snow. It's really clear from the cut scenes that PETA is not brainwashed here in the beginning. I don't know how clear that is if you watch the movie.
Not clear at all. I thought he might be Max Headroom.
Yeah, Katniss keeps saying, what are they doing to him? I'm like, I don't know. He looks a little paler. I don't know. What are they doing to him?
Nothing in the beginning. I don't believe that they really start affecting his mind until he betrays them and announces that there's going to be an attack on District 13 while he is on camera. But before that, I think he was being genuine. I think he legitimately thought Katniss was being a victim of propaganda.
And I've been just trying to figure out if he was a victim of propaganda. Since this is a propaganda war, I couldn't tell. Does he believe what he's saying? Is there someone off screen with a gun pointing at him saying, say it? Or is he brainwashed? And yeah, they're in some kind of future technology world. I thought he could be a CG creation.
I was all ready for the big old war after catching fire, but I like this chess game that they're playing here. I do like this propaganda war. They bring out PETA and, you know, it turns all the rebels against PETA, and Katniss is like, nope, we gotta save him if you want me to be your Mockingjay. Like, it really puts her in a dangerous situation. It just brings up some intriguing points, some mechanizations that they gotta move around to make this rebellion work. And so even though I'm not getting the big battle I wanted right away, I do like this game that's going on between both sides.
I'm glad to hear it, because that is effectively, by cutting the book the way that they did, that's effectively most of what you're going to get here. And I still like it. I still think that this series has worked for me as satire. And so what you're getting here mostly are all of these sort of kind of enjoyable moments that Katniss basically negotiates that she'll play this Mockingjay, but you've got to make sure that once we get PETA, he won't be executed. And I love the fact that Coin is at first like, no, I'm not going to negotiate with you. But ultimately, Katniss has him over a barrel. There is only one Katniss, and if they want a figure that can unite the districts, she would be the most visible. She's their biggest celebrity.
And I don't know why they wouldn't realize that right away. The fact that their president says no makes me actually believe in their president a little bit more. I'm like, well, maybe they don't just want to trot her out like a symbol. Later on, I get completely convinced. Like, there's one time where the president is making a speech and brings Katniss out, referring to her again only as the Mockingjay, just basically brings her out like a prop and then says, okay, you can leave. I'm going to do my speaking now. I can tell the president doesn't really respect Katniss, but that she doesn't agree to negotiate Katniss's terms makes me also think she thinks Katniss isn't that important, that she isn't the lightning rod that will draw the rebellion together, when these movies have told me that's exactly what she is. And so I'm just like, haven't you been watching, President?
Well, I'm glad to hear you say this, Arnie. You're closer than you think. I can't know because I haven't seen the movie next week. But if it follows many of the ideas that are in the book, you're going to see these characters clash.
I hope so, because I'm tired of Katniss being drug around. Now, this happens pretty early on, before Katniss makes her demands. I'm again sitting there and I'm like, Katniss, you're pretty much the one in charge here. You can do whatever. It takes her little sister to point that out to her. And I'm like, God, once again, Katniss can't figure a damn thing out. But that's the last time in this movie anyway that she has to be pointed in a direction and marched off. Once she finally realizes she has power, she actually starts to use it. But I felt for both the first two movies and the first half hour of this one, she's been basically a puppet, an avatar.
Yeah, to me, that's not a criticism. I like the fact that it's a drama about an unconfident loner who realizes she has to take a stand against what people want her to be. That this is a fight to be, yeah, introverted, basically.
But it is hard to root for an action hero who, for two films, has been introverted. You want an action hero to be action-y and heroic. And looking at this as a saga, I'll agree with you. That would be great if this were one movie. But we've had to sit through two movies where I'm being told she's the hero and not seeing it. This is the first movie where I really do start to get that evolution of character into what I felt she should have been in the first movie. Just not from a character standpoint, but from a dramatically satisfying standpoint.
I do think President Coin is testing Katniss when she says no to see if she'll come back. And I feel like, yes, that is Katniss's pivotal moment where she finally asserts herself and stands up to someone and says, no, we're doing it my way. So I feel like that was a bit of a test on the president's part.
Yeah, and keep in mind, Katniss has had a similar relationship with her own mother, where she had to be the one that kept the household running while the mom went insane and, you know, grieved for the father that died. So I think she's used to fighting back against older women here. But Katniss, again, I think that she would much rather just be out in the wilderness. She doesn't want to be a part of anybody's plan. She thinks it's all games. And so that she's playing the Mockingjay, to me, I think she's accepting this role mostly because she believes she can reach Peeta. That by doing this, they will rescue Peeta, and that her spots will convince Peeta that Snow has you snowed. You know, what may not be clear watching this movie, that's more clear in the book, is that Peeta has no idea that District 12 is gone, nor does any of the other districts. Nobody knows it's been bombed.
Which is strange, because I think that that's something Snow would want to use for the propaganda. And I don't know that I got that. I thought people realized. But while Katniss may only be interested in saving Peeta for whatever reason, I guess I'm still not sure of, but I definitely get the impression once she sees District 12, and once she starts giving her impassioned speeches, which were all very reality TV to me with that crew following her around, but I think that she starts to believe it herself.
And it should be called out that crew, they have broken off from the Capitol. They're not from a district, which, again, caused me to wonder, like, is there going to be a twist here? Like, is there going to be a backstabbing here? Because we find out people have broken off from the Capitol to assist this rebellion.
Well, they really don't give any lip service to it, but one of them is an AVOX, and those are the slaves in the Capitol. That is a prisoner of one of the other districts. Sometimes you're executed, and sometimes they bring you to the Capitol, cut out your tongue, and make you do menial tasks like, yeah, give Snow a shave. Or, yeah, I guess this guy got to run the camera or whatever. But, yeah, he cannot speak. But, yeah, that's why they all have funky style about them. They kept that Capitol haircut, anyway, the director. But they're kind of fun. They bring life into this, and I do feel like the movie is less somber once they are pushing Katniss as a reality TV star. Because, as I said in my plot summary, when she's on a soundstage, it's kind of a funny scene. Yeah. Like, she tries, but she's not an actress. She cannot conjure the horrors on a green screen. She needs to be there, and Haymitch understands that.
Ironically, probably a lot of this was shot on a green screen.
I was right back to my initial metaphor for this entire series being Jennifer Lawrence's rise to fame. You know, we had her dealing with her first publicity tour and dealing with her first stylist and her first publicist and her first acting coach. Well, now we have her on X-Men First Class, and she's having to act in front of a green screen.
Yeah, and she gets an upgrade. She gets a cool uniform. She gets incendiary and explosive arrows along with her regular ones. I like that little cue James Bond moment. Don't shoot that arrow in here.
Yeah, I was thinking about Rambo with those exploding arrows, but I went with it. It was kind of cool. And I do like Beatty. He's really grown on me. Jeffrey Wright, I mean, he is from James Bond. He is Felix Leiter over there. And I really enjoyed his presence in this movie even more than the last. Did he lose a leg in the last movie? I couldn't recall that.
Yeah, he's in a wheelchair now. I didn't get why.
He was injured. If you remember, when Katniss came back there to the lightning tree, he was laid out on the ground bleeding. It was a very confusing moment, so I'm not sure who cut who, but I think the tributes of two had injured him, and he will not be able to walk again.
But now Katniss is going to go with her film crew to District 8 to see the wounded. They're all gathered up in a hospital.
It's good to get action. Is it enough for you guys? Again, it would be wrong to sell this movie as any kind of action movie, but I do think that these are the moments that might wake up fans that wanted to see a war movie this time.
I'm going to put it this way. I'm not as into it as with Catching Fire, but I enjoy this chess game. I really am wondering who I can trust with these rebels playing Katniss so much. Like, she goes in there, she's like, you can't film this, I can't help them. And they just keep rolling. Like, they are exploiting her just as much as Snow was. And that is keeping me interested in this film, because I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. You know, at one point, Katniss says, oh, PETA, he's still playing the game. I'm like, oh, is that going to be the big mind fuck? That the Hunger Game's still going on? That they're still going to have to face off by the end of this? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and I agree, Jacob. I don't think the Hunger Games has ever worked for me as an action franchise. And therefore, it hasn't worked for me as a franchise. But here, now that we're getting into, as you called it, the political chess game, I'm actually intrigued. I'm enjoying it far more as a political drama than I ever did as this young adult murder fiction. I mean, if I wanted that, I'd go back and rewatch Battle Royale. It's so much better. But this hospital attack has one of the single most exciting things I've seen this year in a movie, let alone this series. When they bomb, and when Katniss and Gale are kind of looking out at the bombers, and that fucking smokestack comes down, I jumped. I'm like, holy crap, I did not expect that to happen. It was so out of the blue in what I thought was a quiet moment to see the smokestack coming down that I thought was inescapable. Kudos to them on that. It didn't look very real. The CGI as a whole in this movie sucks, but that was an effective moment.
It's the right kind of footage they need. I mean, when she's screaming, if we burn, you burn with us, when they can get on camera that, you know, with a flick of an arrow, she can take down a ship. I mean, that's where you realize maybe we should put her on the front lines. Maybe we actually do need to have her in combat rather than in this decorative position, because she could be a warrior if you wanted it that way. But again, these rebels, they're trying to inflame and incite and educate and in some ways use propaganda on the other 12 districts. They're not really ready yet to all storm the gates. It's not quite there yet.
But we do see the Lumber District. I'm not sure what number they are, but the Lumber District.
7.
Okay, 7. They do take action. Like, Snow gets meaner. He increases the quota. They have to work longer, and they get this great thing where they run off into the trees and climb the trees and bomb a bunch of the peace guards.
Yeah, one of the few scenes without Katniss, a scene that is not in the book.
See, and this is what I wanted to see more of, is just like, what is going on in this world? So I appreciate this scene.
Yeah, I liked that scene quite a bit. And which district was it that was storming like a power plant? That was the capital, wasn't it?
No, that was 5. District 5 supplies power. That's later in the movie when they want to have the capital go into blackout. They destroy the hydroelectric dam, and you get that Private Ryan kind of moment.
Yeah, anytime the districts start uprising, there's effective action there. This is, I guess, what I wanted from the series. I wanted to see more of the universe. I've been saying that for the past 2 movies. I was tired of being stuck in District 12 and in some force field game. Now that we're getting to see the different districts, see the people in the districts, it's actually giving me a feeling for the oppression that I hadn't gotten before. And yet, I don't feel it's entirely one-sided. I don't think that Snow is a cartoonish villain like Skeletor or Megatron, because when he gives his speech that the capital is the heart, and the heart pumps blood to the limbs and all of that, it makes sense. I mean, there's an entire economy that is built there that I'm not sure Julianne Moore is prepared to recreate.
I agree. She has not done anything to convince that she could replicate the living conditions they currently have. But there is brutality here. By stepping up the peacekeeping force, people are being gunned down more often. Snow is clearly a villain, but yes, he has given them a quality of life that I think that it would be hard for people to start all over. I mean, that's oftentimes why people stay in unpopular situations, is that it would be stepping out of a frying pan into a fire. And well, Katniss is building the fire, but what will it look like after it burns? Next week.
I think a telling moment for Katniss, and one of my favorite scenes in this film, is she's hunting for elk again, and and she can't shoot it because it's not scared of humans. Like, there's something about her. She doesn't want to taint this innocent creature. And to me, that speaks volumes about who this character is. Like, that why she's been so hesitant to get involved with this revolution is she sees something, that there is something dangerous in there, that you could taint people and they could just go the same way Snow has become.
This is how you know she's not a total Tea Partier, because up to this point, she's about small government and living off the land, hunting, weapons. You know, if she could get guns, she'd support guns. But yes, in this moment, she always hunted for food. It's worth pointing out, she never went out to kill because she liked the hunt or that she felt powerful by taking life. She doesn't need this food. So in some ways, I'm wondering why these kids are even doing that. But I think it was just their way of being alone and being together. And it was kind of where she fell in love. But are you guys seeing the tension here? I'm not sure it's as clear as it is in the book, but Gale is really much more of a party line rebel than she is able to go with.
I got a little of that, like when they get back from, I think it's their hunting expedition, and he's off doing his duty and she's like feeling left behind because she doesn't seem to be given that responsibility. She's a symbol, not an actual leader.
Well, when they go to District 12, like after PETA shows up again on the news, they're like, oh, we got to do another propo. We got to show them District 12. And that goes to Gale. Like, it seems like Katniss doesn't want to exploit that moment. So the cameras go to Gale and he's the one that gives the speech there.
Yeah, that can't play well for our poor baker's son, PETA. I mean, keep in mind, assuming they're not injecting him with Tracker Jacker venom at this point, I think that he would still have a lot of love for Katniss, and to know that there's the old boyfriend, you know, that can't be totally popular. But I do get the sense that Gale, you know, they have one exchange where she kisses him and he challenges her. He basically says, you can only care about me when I'm in pain. And I think there's some real truth to that. I do think that Katniss is broken in that way, that she can only love someone that's injured, that she is not capable of having a social life or being happy. And so maybe that is what you're brushing up against, Arnie, is that this is a seriously downtrodden, unhappy, defiant person who doesn't dream of a happier place to be.
Yeah, when she breaks out into song, and okay, this really is my favorite moment, because I love me like some folk music and revolution going on at the same time. When she breaks out in this real bluesy song, it's about, yeah, like what, meeting your lover at the hanging tree. I was shocked. I thought this was like some old African-American song from the fields. No, I in the credits, Suzanne Collins wrote it.
Yeah, it's in the book.
It's a really good song. I can't believe that Jennifer Lawrence has that voice, but it sounds really like she's singing it.
You know, it was a pop hit, right? It charted. They put this out with a little techno beat, and it did pretty good.
I know, forget the techno beat. I like how it is in this.
I like the Lord song, but I didn't know that one.
Yeah, I think Lord was actually the musical supervisor for this one, and she was the one that sort of oversaw this remix and all. But yeah, they played, I heard this on the radio, the Hanging Tree remix. And it is, it's effective. It does remind you of, yeah, those kind of Negro spirituals back before, you know, back in the Jim Crow times. Yeah, a hanging tree. I mean, that's, again, this is not a girl that's singing about paradise or somewhere over the rainbow. She's talking about where lovers can finally meet when they're dead. I mean, she's a real drag. I'll admit it. Katniss is really unfun.
Plutarch even has to change the lyrics. Like, they digitally AVR her instead of necklace of rope. They change it to necklace of hope.
Yeah, I don't blame him. I mean, she's a pill. And if you're wanting an inspirational figure, she isn't the one to go with. She has the fire, and that was always her selling point. But if you want to give people hope and change in Obama, yeah, I do really think that they should have gone with PETA. And they do. I mean, PETA is going to do something. He had a pardon from them anyway. I kind of wish that she hadn't negotiated that pardon, but I guess they wanted her to look effective standing up to COIN. But it would be better if they were like, no, when we catch him, he's going to stand trial. But he really proves himself by finally telling the rebels, hey, they're coming for you tonight. Take cover. Of course, I don't know how effective it would be to bomb someplace that's already been bombed and they already live underground.
Well, we find out because they start fighting back and District 13 figures, oh, they don't even know where we are. They're waiting for us to fire so they could bomb our new installations. once they figure that out, they just wait it out. And yeah, they're able to be successful just waiting it out.
That is kind of lame. I gotta admit, we're really ready for a big blowout here in the middle. And it was always a problem in the book, too, that Snow's plan is to drop bombs on the very same place that he dropped bombs on, you know, 80 years ago. Why would that be effective? Why would he think that dropping bombs now as opposed to any time? I mean, they've known the rebels have been there the whole time. They've just been inactive. You can't kill them by dropping more bombs. They're underground.
Maybe they had better bunker busters by then. It feels like they were attacking one spot and the rebels had moved to another area underground.
Yeah, they went deeper.
I mean, my problem is they try to force some drama in here by having Primrose go missing because she's got to save the cat. I saw this in Aliens.
Yeah, you did. Here's the thing, that in a world where people are hungry, there are no more pets, it shows humanity that a girl could care about a cat, that she's not chopping it up and eating it. Speaks to the fact that people haven't been so broken by this starved world. So I get why the cat's here. I think it has a nice function in that way, but in this moment, it just looks like a contrivance to give some adrenaline to what is otherwise a kind of boring climax.
Yeah. Is it wrong that I wanted Primrose and the cat just to die for their stupidity?
Save it.
Oh, yeah. I knew something was coming with the cat. You told me. But at this point, I'm like, oh, God. And maybe it's just not compassionate, but I'm thinking, I understand exactly what they were doing. I also knew they weren't going to die. If they survived the bombing of District 12, they weren't going to die this way for the cat.
Perhaps the bombing would have been more effective if Snow didn't just drop roses. Like, they go out and there's roses. There's those white roses everywhere.
Yeah, it's his calling card. He really likes to let you know he was there with that white rose. And it's almost undersold, but Finnick kind of explains, this is what I was talking about before, Finnick explains that Snow has gotten to be in his position of power by poisoning people. And that he himself has consumed enough poison in his life that his mouth is now covered in sores. And so whenever he drinks or anything, he's just bleeding all the time. Like a snake, he's always spitting out poison. I always thought that was a very effective moment in the book. Here, because it's Finnick saying it to the cameras while a SWAT team rescue is happening, I feel like it gets undersold.
I caught it.
Yeah, okay. All right, good.
Yeah, no, here's the bigger question. So yeah, this SWAT team goes to save PETA and the other tributes. Of course, Katniss gets left behind because she's not allowed to do anything in this film.
To be fair, though, Jacob, if she is your visible symbol, you wouldn't put her on the front lines, right? I mean, that was smart of Coin. Coin was right for doing it, but boy, you do wish she was doing something.
Yeah, I'm going to have to wait for the next film for her to become the hero. But what I want to go over with Finnick's speech, yeah, he's going to reveal Snow has gotten to power because he's killed all his enemies and anyone that was a threat to him. But so were the tributes getting pimped out by Snow? Like Finnick says, I know secrets because we get used by people in the capital. Like, are they prostitutes?
Yeah, he even has a line in this movie. It's much more clear in the book. Snow sold his body. All the times that people saw him on television with different women, it wasn't because he was living a playboy life. He was literally being made to have sex with powerful people. And men, women, all of it, he was a gigolo. Winning the Hunger Games did not lead to the good life. It meant that he was still a pawn in Snow's power games. And yeah, I thought that was a very provocative thing to put on the page. It gets a little undersold here.
Yeah, I did not get that in this. I didn't catch that at all. It's a little shocking.
Yeah, it's very subtle, but I'm like, wait, did he just say what I think he said?
He said he sold my body. They throw one line in, but I'm telling you, there's so much going on in the other scenes that I didn't notice it the first time I saw this movie.
This is what's happening with all the tributes. This is what would happen to Katniss if this revolution didn't start.
Yes, if Snow saw fit, he would have Katniss go pleasure whoever he wanted.
I don't think she could pleasure anyone with that personality.
I agree. She's not who you call for that, actually. If you need an arrow shot through a apple, she's your girl, but
for a bad time call.
Yeah, I agree. She is not on the party line in the Capitol. I don't see it happening here. But yeah, I thought that that was very provocative and makes you reevaluate Finnick completely. He seems very broken in this movie. He was so cocky and confident when he approached her last movie and said, "Oh, I trade in secrets." And we thought, oh, what a powerful, kind of intimidating guy he was. And now you realize, oh, what a wreck. What a ruined man.
I still like him, though. That actor still has a charisma. I did enjoy him more in his larger role last time. We don't see much of him here, and I am now getting that Aquaman vibe when they say, "We have a trident for him." Yes. Why?
It's all coming next week, I agree.
Yeah, that was his weapon before, and Catching Fire was the trident.
And why?
He's of the fishing district, you know?
Okay.
You get stereotyped, you know? If you're from the fishing district, I mean, I think there was even a line last time when the girl from the lumber district was like, "They're always dressing me as trees." You get pigeonholed. It's like, oh, you're from that district, you'll be this. Yeah, he is Aquaman. He's got to wear a trident and a scaled swimsuit all the time.
At this point, I'm waiting for, like, what's the twist? Like, Katniss contacts Snow. Like, the power had been blown up. The power district blew up their power. They finally rebooted in the capital. She's trying to get Snow's attention because the Strike Force is there. We see the lights go on when the Strike Force is going to save the tributes. Like, there's this real tense moment of what's going to happen. You know, I love the line, "Did I lose them both tonight?" Like, another great Jennifer Lawrence moment in this movie. But they all just show up again. And I'm like, okay, so someone's like actually a bad guy at this point. Because there's no way they just showed up even though Snow knew they were in the Capitol saving these tributes.
It's another one of those scenes that should be exciting. I actually think it's filmed really well. There's like a Zero Dark 30 way to the way this SWAT team.
Yeah, it's exciting until the lights go on.
Yeah, they're going in, they're dropping in. You're like, wow, this is going to be good. And then when you realize that Snow is letting them do this and that they're just throwing knockout gas and there's just not going to be conflict, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, but I like the way that it's revealed because you've got Finnick who's basically filibustering so that Beatty can get in and keep the electrical grid down so those guys can go in with their night vision goggles. And when that starts to fail, Katniss gets on and starts calling out to Snow. And I really thought that Snow was just so egotistical or obsessed with Katniss, and I kind of get that maybe there's a lecherous kind of sexual thing on his part. I mean, especially with what you said earlier about Finnick being whored out, that like Snow would want to break Katniss to that level. It's something I'm getting from Sutherland's performance anyway. He just comes across really lecherous. But that he answers the call, I take as his weakness. And it seemed even like Katniss was scoring some points. And so I really, really loved it when he finally drops the bomb and he's like, "No, I know exactly what you're doing and you're all screwed." And that line he says, that what you love will kill you. I mean, I knew what was coming, even though I didn't know exactly what was coming.
It's the things we love the most that destroy us. And that is the twist of the ending. It's the only real jolt in this whole melancholy movie, is that the only time I really feel like, oh my God, grab your armrest of your seat, they did something I did not see coming, even though I probably should have, is that, yes, they do. They get PETA back, no problem. He's waking up, he looks okay, they're a little malnourished, but they're alive and healthy.
Yeah, Joanna's had her head shaved.
Yeah, and emaciated. They did some CGI stuff to make them look like they've been in concentration camps. But yes, the idea that now the boy that loved her is now the boy that hates her is, I think, a good twist. And they even considered ending the movie with him choking her with his hands wrapped around her neck and her screaming. That was originally the ending. And then they realized, nah, we have to give him a little bit more.
I would have liked that. That would have guaranteed me coming back and getting my ass in a seat.
Yeah, by ending it the way they do, they take the tension away again. As this movie is wont to do, they're like, oh, we didn't want to upset you too much. Here, she's fine.
Yeah, but I still feel like I'm still wondering what's going on with these other characters. Earlier on with President Coin, she's told like she's too blunt. She's too the point. Like, she needs to be more flowery, and we see her giving this big speech at the end, and Plutarch is like mouthing the words. Like, obviously he wrote this speech, so I'm like, ooh, what is going on with him? Like, what is, like, I still feel like there's something even bigger going on. Yeah, you got Katniss, she's in a neck brace. I don't know, that is a chilling scene as she walks up to that window, and you're not quite sure what you're going to see with PETA, and he's just thrashing about. I like this ending. It's good enough.
Yeah, I agree. It's still creepy. Again, if her whole mission, this whole movie, has been to get him to safety because he was the one that was going to really lead this rebellion, well, this movie decisively says not true, unless they can reverse it. I mean, that's, you know, obviously Beatty can run into the lab, inject him with something. Next movie, he's fine. But if they follow the book, it won't be that easy.
But let's find out how excited we are to finish. Jacob Stewart, do you recommend The Hunger Games? Mockingjay, part one, Jacob.
You know, I got why Stewart tried to temper me down last week, because I was so excited, and I'm like, oh, I'm ready for that battle. And no, this is a different kind of film. This is a one that's building. I don't know if it's 100% necessary. I get it. They want to split this apart to make more money. But looking at what they did provide here, I like the chess game going on. I like these pieces moving around, building up to this battle. I'm actually more unsure about people's alliances now than I was after the last film, which that's a good thing. It's got me guessing. I guess I could give it some points too, because it tries to have a story here. Like, it doesn't just totally cut off. This is more or less about rescuing PETA. Like, that's a theme throughout the film, and that's how it ends. So I give it a little golf clap for that, for actually trying to tell a complete story, even though it's only half of the story here. But I'm still excited for next week. I'm ready to see how it all goes down. Like I said, I love watching revolutions happen to folk songs, and I get that in this film, so it's not as strong a recommend as last week, but this is still a recommend.
Stuart.
You know, I was convinced coming back to this series that the first movie was going to be the weakest one, because I remembered being kind of blah about how they had translated the movie so cheaply. And in watching it a second time a few weeks ago, I realized that there was still a lot that I liked, that the filmmakers couldn't kill about it, that there was just, you know, Hunger Games is my favorite book of the trilogy, and it was a solid recommend for that one, even despite its flaws. To me, now it's very clear, watching this movie a second time, actually a third time because I watched it with commentary, this is the weak link. We really didn't need Mockingjay to be broken in half. Which is not to say that I dislike this. I like this character. I like this world. I'm okay with it, but it feels like I'm watching an extended cut. It feels like a lot of the things we see here are enriching to character detail, but aren't really helping momentum, tension, getting us into the fight, getting us back into an arena should always be happening in any Hunger Games movie. And here, the fact that it's been on a slow boil with only a few moments of flare up is a problem. So while I think that this movie can be a little boring, I still enjoy it. And I still, obviously, knowing what's coming, greatly anticipate seeing a conclusion next week. So it's a weak recommend, but if the choice was I could stop and not watch the rest of it, I'd still want to know what happens. I'd still keep watching this story. I'd still want to see part two. So that's why it's a mild recommend.
And I hate this. I really hate this. I hate when they split movies up and are intentionally not telling a complete story. You know, the previous two Hunger Games at least kind of stood on their own. I'd say Hunger Games 1 stood alone better than Hunger Games 2 did, and Hunger Games 2 had kind of that Empire Strikes Back feeling. But here I am, having to review the first half of a book when I don't know what the second half of the book is. And so I always feel in this case that whatever arrow I give right now is very conditional, because I can't imagine any other case where we'd review half a movie and then give that a ranking and be like, so, what do you think of the first 45 minutes of Shocker?
Yeah, exactly. We've done that many times. I liked the first half of this movie and then it went to hell. Red Arrow. Well, when you don't have the rest of it, what's the arrow?
Yeah, I'm with in Stewart's camp. Like, after Hunger Games, I didn't want to come back. After this, I want to come back. So it's a successful first half.
And I think this film did a lot of things right. We didn't talk about Philip Seymour Hoffman in this. I love him in this. I think his character as basically, he was the game master last time, and now he's almost like minister of propaganda. He's not actually with the rebels. The president makes that clear, but he's the one kind of as a liaison between Katniss and the president of the rebels. And I really like the performance he gives here. I like both new additions to the cast. Him and Julianne Moore bring a lot of star power, of acting credibility, and of intriguing characters to this movie. I think Jennifer Lawrence is given more to do once she finally does catch fire and start giving her speeches. And I really did laugh out loud at her green screen scene, just picturing her as an actress doing that for the first time. And yeah, the songs are good, but it's a little bit slow, especially the first half, and especially for somebody who's not really invested in this universe. I've been intrigued by the universe, but I never gave it a green arrow.
Are you going to start? I'll be shocked. Really? You're going to give it a green?
I'm giving this a mild recommend.
Wow.
What? This is crazy. This is like when you gave a red arrow to Exorcist, but like the one with Cheche.
I think this one is the best movie. It had me intrigued from beginning to end. I've been far more interested in the political intrigue than I ever was in the games. And so, yeah, I think the series works as political thriller where it never worked as action film. And it finally gave me what I wanted. I've been saying since part one, show me the districts. Show me this world. They did that, and that's what I'd been asking for, and I was rewarded when they did it. It wasn't just that they gave me what I wanted, they gave it to me in a good way. I can't say that I'm racing to rewatch this movie or saying, oh my god, you gotta see it.
It doesn't get better with second viewing, I'm just here to tell you.
And I do think that I had to have the background of the first two in order to appreciate anything here. I'm not saying because I gave those red arrows that you could just jump right into this one.
What a funny idea. Wow, you would really be selling somebody a false promise if you said, only see this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's because I sat through the last two that I was intrigued enough to find enjoyment in this one and to get what I got out of it. But yeah, so far, this is the one I've found the most enjoyment in and feel is the best written of the group and the best acted of the group. I hope the part two doesn't just turn to shit and make me go, yeah, I changed my mind. Because if part two sucks, then this is all a waste.
Sure, I get that. But keep in mind, the same writer for this part wrote the second part. They were all conceived as one thing. Some director, cameraman, nothing is going to change from next week other than storylines.
But was it the same writer last week?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
They had a different set of writers on Catching Fire and a different set of writer and director on the first movie. So the creative team is intact from this movie to finish it up.
Maybe they got it right, but we'll find out next week. And before we go, I do want to thank our donors for joining us and hopefully watching the movies along with us. We greatly appreciate your support. We're going to theaters a lot right now. I mean, we had Spectre. We've got Mockingjay Part 2, we've got Rocky, and of course, we've got The Force Awakens. So it's your support that keeps all of this going. So thank you so much, and we will talk to you next week with Mockingjay Part 2. It's open today, and by the time you hear this, we've probably all seen it. So we'll be reviewing that next week. And Jacob Stewart, thank you for joining me.
You bet.
And until next time, may the podcast be ever in your favor.
When you fired your arrow at the force field, you electrified the nation. Everyone at 13 is ready for this.
Thank you again for supporting Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this episode in our Hunger Games bonus retrospective series.
Make sure they remember you.
Your support is what keeps Now Playing on the air.
The importance of this moment cannot be overstated.
The Hunger Games films are the property of their individual copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
You know, in wartime, I think even the noblest of causes can be bent a little bit, right?
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2015, all rights reserved.
Let it fly, Miss Everdeen. Let it fly.
We have never seen anything like this, and we will never see anything like it again.
he is Aquaman. He's got to wear a trident and a scaled swimsuit all the time.
Hey, he looks the part more than Jason Momoa.
Oh, that's right. He is Aquaman.
Sure wasn't Conan, if you saw that. Ooh.
Wait, no, was it Conan?
Yeah, he was in the Conan reboot, and man, was that bad.
Oh, I was thinking of Hercules, but you're right, there was a Conan movie. Oof.
Yeah, remember we were going to do it and Red Sonja?
No, I remember you wanted to do it. I remember finding the exit strategy.
I said we were going to. Yes, you found an exit strategy. We dodged a bullet on that flop, but...
Yeah, because I think we had to do Red Sonja on top of it, which, you know... Delight of Delights. I think that was the reason there weren't enough weeks to do Red Sonja, and that is why we didn't cover that movie. And woof! I'm so proud that I found that loophole.